Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. This is Robert A. Wilson. I'm having some trouble with my MiFi. It don't want to play right. I'm going to have to disconnect and come back on. And we'll see what goes on here because it isn't letting my thing come up. And anyway, I will get this straightened out in just a second. And I think I'm going to have to restart my MiFi. Hey, welcome everybody. It's Rob Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom NLI Radio. I had a little go around with my MiFi. It just didn't want to play right at the beginning of the show. So we're going to start now, and I want to welcome my guest, Christine Cargoni, to the show. She's the author of Financial Fables. But tonight we're going to talk about the IRS and some of the scandals that are going on, and she's going to enlighten your wisdom about the IRS. And you can go to financeinlife.com and read about the financial fables. And it's a book wrote in a fable with websites and things to expand your financial wisdom. And without any further ado, I want to welcome the beautiful and talented Christine Cargoni to the show. Welcome, Christine.
Hi, Robert. How are you tonight?
Oh, playing with my MiFi.
Right. Well, you know, the one thing about the Internal Revenue Service is they have really tried over the last 10 years to become so user-friendly. They probably have spent millions of dollars to become user-friendly. They have a great site called www.irs.gov. It helps all kinds of people. However, only 14% of the people in the United States trust the Internal Revenue Service. Now, that's a little harsh, I think 14%. That was from a survey from Yahoo Finance. Now, according to the Huffington Post, it's a little bit more, about 21% have a favorable opinion of the Internal Revenue Service. But the main reason is because of their abuse of power. You know, people perceive them as you know, being invasive in people's lives. You know, everything that you do from your birth to your death is affected by taxes. If you get married, it changes your tax status. If you get divorced, if you have children, when you buy something, you pay tax. I mean, everybody pays taxes. And the thing is, this whole country was founded on the foundation of a protest against taxes. You know, the Boston Tea Party was about no taxation without representation. So, you know, this whole scandal that just came up is just really also another perception of what happens when a group of people have too much power. Now, Robert, the thing is, this was at a critical time because this group within the Internal Revenue Service was able to deny tax exemption status to conservative groups to raise money in a very critical time from May 2011 to June 2012. They basically targeted people who had Tea Party or Patriots in their application for a tax exemption status. And they did this for almost a year from, and so basically, these people who would have otherwise maybe raised money to campaign against liberal thought processes in the major election and the major presidential election were denied that privilege to do so.
And, you know, that's the thing. The IRS and the people, is it the IRS or the people in there just use their power so they can just to make themselves feel good, to feel their ego? Because I had a friend of mine, his name's Dean Druin, he does taxing. But he says there's like one in three families or one in three people in the United States being hounded by the IRS. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, I wouldn't say haunted or followed, but definitely, when I was doing tax preparation earlier in my life, and and I love tax law. I really did. When I was young, I asked for a federal tax guide for Christmas. I was so enthusiastic about tax law. Now, this is a code of our government that went from approximately a couple hundred pages when it first started in the early 1900s to thousands of pages that people go through every year. And basically, people at this point in time really are afraid of the IRS. When I would prepare tax returns, people would say, no, don't take that deduction. I don't want to get audited, even if they were entitled to the deduction. And that's really why I wanted to come on tonight and just tell your listeners, you've got to stand up for your rights. You have to take your deductions when you're supposed to take your deductions. Now, the way that you do that is that the IRS does not have a right to know any more than what they specifically ask for on their notice. So whenever you're doing it, and most people think, well, I'm getting audited. I have to go into the IRS office. I'm going to lose a day's pay, or I have to take a day's vacation, and then they're going to come after me. I have had clients that have taken deductions, and then they, it was like a businessman in particular, and the IRS sent him a letter and said, we deny you these kind of deductions, and he says, no, I'm not going to pay that. I have proof of my deductions. He sent all the paperwork to the IRS, and they sent it back, and they lowered the tax bill. They originally asked for $1,000. No, they wanted $500. And he said, no, I'm not going to pay you that $500. I took my legitimate deductions. And he got all his paperwork together, and he sent it into the IRS, and they sent him back another letter saying, okay, you owe us $125. And then he says, no, I'm not going to pay the $125. I took legitimate deductions. And he took his paperwork, and he sent it in, and then he said, he came back, and they said, they owe you $10. And he said, okay, because I don't want to do all of this anymore, I'll send you the $10. So the bottom line is, if you have a legitimate tax deduction and you have the paperwork behind it, and you know that, and this is one good way to use credit cards. I don't advocate getting credit cards for being in debt, but it is a good way to show that you've spent money on a legitimate travel expense for business or an office expense, or especially medical expenses. If you have a lot of medical expenses mounting up, use your credit card. You have that statement to show the IRS. All you have to do is produce that statement, send it in. You've got those deductions. If you're ever questioned, you have the paperwork behind it. So, there is a lot of good agents in the IRS, but they are trained to be very skeptical about the taxpayer. You know, the taxpayer, you know, 9 times out of 10 is going to be more than honest. And on the other side, the people at the IRS are looking for the tax cheats. And a lot of times they'll prosecute the honest people. It's just like being, you know, a person who's an honest person in a crowd. You know, they're always looking for the tax cheats.
And but do they lump everybody in together in the IRS, do you feel, Christine?
I don't think that they, you know, lump everybody together. They are looking for specific deductions. For example, they'll target small business owners because they feel that a lot of small business owners will take, and if you file a Schedule C, they'll scrutinize that a lot more because they feel a lot of small business owners will take tax deductions that are more personal rather than business-related. And that's really very legitimate in a lot of senses because most small business people, 90% of their life is really tied up in their business. When you have a small business, you are always working. You're always going. You're always networking. You're always trying to get more business in. So that's one of the things that they'll target. They generally accept donations on your Schedule A up to about 2% of your income. Now, if you're a Christian, some Christian believes that they tithe 10% of their income, and some people are even more generous than that. So if you have more than 2% of your tax deduction goes into charitable deductions, then you should probably be prepared to show the IRS that you are legitimately gave that money to a charity.
Now, this is something that I, you know, they say buy something. A lot of businesses go buy, you know, something to lower their tax rate or their taxes. But really, is that a good thing to buy something to lower your taxes? Because taxes are about 30% in interest. You get about 25 cent deduction on interest. Is that a good thing?
But generally, I would not encourage a small business just to go and buy something to just in order to lower their taxes. But a lot of times, the types of equipment they need is beneficial to increase their productivity. So if you're going to increase your productivity, for example, if you need a new printer and it's going to print faster and you're going to be able to go off and do more business because you've got that printer, then definitely invest in that. If you need to upgrade your computer and because you need to connect faster or you need to have more information, or if you have to have more programs, definitely invest in that. But I would never tell somebody to invest in just to go for tax avoidance because it doesn't pay off just to avoid taxes. There's other ways that you can do tax planning for small businesses. For example, a small business owner, if he has a tax plan, he can put together his own retirement plan and structure that to be very beneficial for himself or herself. There is also tax credits that you can get for investing in particular things. We used to have a lot of energy credits here in the United States. So there's tax credits and for college expenses, there's tax credits for education, especially education. You know, I'm a huge advocate of education, and especially if it's going to help your business and it's going to help promote you. And because you know what, your clients pay for your expertise. They're not for the time that you spend with them, but the amount of knowledge that you can give and the amount that you pay for that knowledge. You know, whether you can give that knowledge within 5 to 10 minutes or it takes you an hour to produce that knowledge, it's the same rate. So basically, your clients pay for your expertise. The quicker you can do that work, the better off you are, whether it's with computerization or where it's investment in knowledge or education. So whatever you can do to do that. I would always encourage small business people to go forward with that type of tax reduction.
Now, how is this scandal that you and I are talking about actually going to give the IRS a bigger black eye and energize more hate and discontent and fear towards them, do you feel?
Well, Robert, I can't really see how they could generate more hate. Like I said when we started off, only 14% of the population actually trusts them. I mean, that's really, you know, and that has to be people who actually work for the government. Almost everybody else who's out there doesn't even trust them. You know, they don't trust what they say. They don't trust to file their taxes. They don't trust what happens with their tax money whenever it goes there. They just don't trust this agency. And, you know, the fact of the matter.
Go ahead, finish.
You have a woman, Lois Lerner. She stood in front of the congressional committee, and she said she didn't do anything wrong. You know, somebody who was an attorney, she's had 34 years in government service. She was actually forced to resign because she was placed on leave because she was asked to resign, but she refused. She has enough gall to stand in front of the Senate Finance Committee and say she's done nothing wrong. And, people have to start writing their representatives and coming forward and saying, you know, we need to have some type of representation for our taxation dollars. We need to start, for example, there was another survey on Yahoo that said over 50% of people wanted to have the government refinance or go in and finance the infrastructure of the United States, but they don't feel that there should be more taxes levied against us. We are paying a tremendous amount of tax money. Now, I think everyone should pay their fair share, but not a penny more than your fair share.
Now, you just asked something. This question I really wanted to get to. Do you think the taxes, the way we're being taxed now, is actually hurting the business of the United States and the economics? Because, you know, hourly wages, Christine, are the bottom line of the economy that really generate the rest of it. And do you feel the way the working man is being taxed, it's actually starting to, and the small businesses, they're actually being taxed to where it's really taking away the economy and the chance for growth?
Well, you know, the biggest tax that the small business has to deal with this year is the upcoming Obamacare. Now, the Supreme Court last year came out and classified Obamacare, this new health care reform, as a tax. And really, people should be more upset about that because generally taxes, and they don't have to start in the House Ways and Means Committee, but they're supposed to start in the House Ways and Means Committee. And the fact, they basically are going to be taxing people out of jobs with this health care reform. This is going to be very difficult for small businesses to stay in business. What they have done and what they have actually started to do, and I've seen a trend in this, is putting more people on a part-time basis where they're getting less than 30 hours a week, so they don't qualify for health care benefits. And that's really hurting the individual worker. But it's really the only way small businesses may be able to compete. As far as the regular taxation of business, I don't think that is hurting the small businessman or woman. If you're filing a Schedule C, or if you're in a partnership and you're filing your taxes correctly, you're in the correct tax rate. You know, you do have the added burden of paying for your own Social Security. That sometimes creeps up on people because that's 7.5%, and with the extra Medicare, it's almost 8% that people have to pay. Now they did get a reprieve on that for a couple years. On the tax years, you know, while we were in this economic debacle that we were in. But, you know, that can be, you know, and then when you add your own tax onto that, even if you're in a 15% tax rate, you're looking at 25% tax. So a lot of times what I tell my clients is you really work from January 1st almost to May 15th for the government. Yeah, and this is whether you're working for yourself as a small business person or you're working just for, as an employee. You know, and this is what you get. From this tax work, you get the Social Security system that we're in. You have the infrastructure. You have your highway system, which is very important to our automobile industry. And you get, your Medicare, Medicaid system, and you're providing for the less fortunate. Once you get into May, like right now, we're into that season where we're working for ourselves and what we need to do for our family.
And also, Christine, with all the other taxes, the state taxes, the property taxes, I mean, the people of the United States really can't afford any more taxes. And Obamacare is just about going to wipe out. It's going to really put a sting on the people, don't you feel?
It's going to be tremendously difficult. Everything that I've read so far is even some of the Democrats are looking at it as a train wreck. They really need to address this again before December because it's going to be difficult for the individual worker that is taken from a full-time position down to part-time work because the small business people cannot afford to provide all of this health care. And then if you don't buy your own health care, they're going to put you on some type of health care, and then they're going to tax you. Now, hopefully they're going to, for those who are lower income earners, hopefully they put some kind of structure into place where that tax will be waived if you cannot provide for yourself. So, again, they've got to try and put this together. You know, it really was not well thought out. They put so many pages in. They just pushed it through during the Democratic Congress that they wanted to make sure something got through that was a national health care plan. Now, I do believe that we should have some type of national health care plan. I am a huge advocate of providing for the poor. I don't want to see anybody go without, their health care or to be taken care of. But I think they should be citizens of the United States, number one, and that they should have a right to health care. And, and that they actually work, in the United States, and they pay Social Security taxes, and they pay into our government structure. So if they're not citizens, they actually at least work here, and they pay taxes into the United States in order to qualify for benefits.
Now, you touched on a subject I can really get into, but this new immigration plan, it really opens, it doesn't close the door, it opens the door. And with Obamacare and the IRS all involved, that's kind of like really causing the American people a lot of angst. And what do we need, a $2,000 or 2,000-page or more tax law, and then we need this 2,000-page health care thing? Everything that circumvented is in the back end, and it's the back end of these laws that we never hear about until they're implemented. How do you feel about that?
Robert, I think that there's so much legislation that's put into these bills that a lot of times the people who are voting on this don't really have a chance to digest everything that's in the bill. They want to push it through, and there's a lot of quid pro quo, which is I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back, and so they say, okay, we'll put this in the bill in order for you to vote for it, and then on my side, you put that in the bill, and then it grows uncontrollably. And a lot of times the things that go forward are not actually, there's some people that are in the Senate that said, well, I didn't even know it was in, that was in the bill at the time when they voted for it. So again, this bill for Obamacare started in the Senate, and it really is never supposed to, taxation is not supposed to start in the Senate. It is supposed to start in the House Ways and Means Committee. That's where it should have started so that it could have been a proper way and looked at and gone through the Senate a couple of different times before it ever was voted for, or through the House of Representatives a couple of different times before it's ever put into the Senate and voted through.
You know, it isn't only the distrust of the IRS, but the people have lost the trust in their government. And to you, Christy, what is something they have to do, both of them, the government and the IRS, has to do to get people's trust back a little bit?
Well, you know, it's a very hard question. You know, the one thing I used to love about Ronald Reagan, he had a famous saying that said, trust, but verify. Yeah, so what you need to do is try to get people to trust you again, but then give them always give them feedback that they are getting their money's worth in order to live in this country. Now, when you see bridges collapse and you can't trust that you can go on a highway and you can't trust that the levees in Louisiana are going to hold up when there's a hurricane that goes through, then you have a problem with the infrastructure. The money is not being spent to protect the people the way it's supposed to be. And so when you see the images of these destroyed facilities, this really is hard for the government to justify. You know, so I think that whenever Hurricane Sandy went through and the government came through and they tried to help those victims right away, I think that did a lot to try to instill trust back into the government again, that there is government agency money available for people who are in need.
You know, here's the thing. When it comes to the government, though, the money stays. There's so many layers of bureaucracy. By the time it gets to the people, it's about 10 cents on the dollar.
That is true. You have those famous examples of $1,000 hammers out there, you know, when the government is out there buying for equipment and they're paying way over the way that they should be paying, because they're paying for each person who does the purchasing, they're paying for the person to look over it to make sure that nobody's committing fraud, they're paying for the outsourcer to go out and buy that hammer. You know, it's not that the hammer doesn't cost $1,000. By the time it goes through the bureaucracy, it does cost $1,000. You know, they've got to do more to lower those levels of service by, you know, probably more computerization and going directly for, you know, what they're supposed to be buying.
And, you know, these government credit cards, man, they get abused worse than anything. You know, the Defense Department, some people can buy up to $3,000-$4,000. They buy their personal stuff and nothing really happens to them.
Well, I mean, more than that, I think the government credit cards, they can go up to $5,000 to $10,000 depending upon their level. I don't know whether anything would happen to them. It's supposed to, but let me just say this. You have a major scandal at the IRS. It was investigated from June of 2011 to May of 2012, and we're only hearing about it now. It's a year later, and it's finally coming to the attention of the public. Now, what if this had come to the attention of the public last year while the presidential campaign was going on? There could have been a major repercussion in the campaign against the liberals.
Well, you know, there's some liberals out there that ain't liberal, but here's my problem. And I'm a union electrician. The unions, 43% of them vote conservative. 43 of us vote percent vote conservative, but all the money goes to the liberal, to the Democrats. But here's the thing. If you sit there and go to a break trailer in a union, you're going to hear them talk more conservative than the conservatives.
Well, you know, you don't know. A lot of times, too, you know, helping the poor is sometimes looked at. The way that Republicans generally, the trickle-down effect, was always more that business has the money, and it comes down, and you spend the money through business to come down through to help people help themselves. You know, in a more democratic way, there's more funding that goes through government in order to help people. And it's really a matter of how do we deliver those funds to those who need it the most? How are we fair to the people of the United States or equitable in the distribution of wealth? You know, whenever you have somebody who's tremendously rich and they're making over $200,000 to $250,000 a year, they have a lot of things that might be, you know, termed to be tax deductible. You know, in my own opinion, I don't think that those people should have a tax deduction for a second mortgage. You know, you have a tax deduction for a first mortgage, and everybody has that tax deduction. But to have a tax deduction for a second mortgage, you know, if you can afford to have another home, then you shouldn't have to have, either you don't pay interest on it, or that interest should not be tax deductible. That should not be coming off of the back of the people of the United States. Now, I am more of a conservative person, but I do believe in equity in distribution of taxation.
Here's something for, you know, we have poor people, but, you know, something I've literally discovered, Christine, is as soon as a government gives out one entitlement program, the country is going to go downhill. How do you feel about that?
As soon as they give out one entitlement program?
Yeah, as soon as entitlement programs start, the country becomes thinking they're entitled to everything given to them. Do you feel that? I mean, not everybody, but I mean a percent.
Well, you know, I hate to term it as entitlement per se, because, you know, yeah, in a way, if it's a need, I don't like to put everything all together. If there's a need there, then I think that the government should fill it. You know, but there's too many times where there's not a need but a want, Robert, and people take advantage of that government, you know, on their wants rather than their needs. So you have some people who are collecting Social Security, you know, benefits, disability benefits, that really have just been termed to be disability, but they're not actually disabled. There's probably something else they could be doing to be earning taxable income and feeding the economy. So, yeah, it's a matter of perspective. And, you know, and you go again on some of this fraud that's committed against Medicare. You know, we've done here, I'm from the Southwest Florida, we just had a huge Medicare fraud scheme where they provided taxes. They provided prescription drugs under Medicare that were actually narcotics, and the people were getting this money from the government. The government were paying for narcotics, and they were actually selling the drugs on the street. So you're always going to have those tax cheats out there. I think that if the government could do a better job on finding out exactly who is doing this type of fraudulent actions and investigate them instead of going after honest taxpayers who should take their legitimate tax deductions, we would be much further ahead. People would definitely trust the government more if they didn't feel that the people, that the government or the IRS was constantly looking after them or on their backs or looking over their shoulders. Whenever somebody, you know, you go back to that 1984 model where they said Big Brother is watching, if basically anybody ever thought of Big Brother watching, people think immediately of the IRS. You know, the IRS is out to get us.
And you know, that is the truth. And, you know, usually they use the IRS, the FBI, or the DEA, and they all come together. You know, and but here's something that I really wanted to bounce off of you. We're about out of time here. If we, in the school curriculum, started teaching people in a young age how to invest and how to do this, and taught them about money and wealth, what would that do to the country?
Oh, actually, right now the Department of Defense believes that our national security is based upon our financial security. They need to know, children, this is one of my passions in life, is to have people share their knowledge with their children. That's why I wrote Financial Fables, is so that people could read these fables, talk these things over with their children, and start educate them earlier in life. You know, when you get up to be 18 years old or 20 years old, as a matter of fact, I just weighed in on the idea that, you know, in financial psychology, women find financial aspects of life very stressful. And my take on this is that people are very scared of the unknown. They, you know, and a lot of women are never educated, or they're not, you know, encouraged to participate in financial education. And this is one of those things that, you know, they push on men, and then men find it very stressful because now they're, you know, have to take on the whole, you know, the financial responsibility of their whole family. You know, this all should be a family type of conversation. Everybody in the family should contribute to the family's well-being. And if the younger children, you know, that I wrote an article one time about children learning about finances, and that children actually start to learn about, or they're capable of learning about finances as young as kindergarten, when they play supermarket in kindergarten. Like they learn how the bartering system. You know, you take an apple from your cart and you get something in return. And so basically, you know, the bartering system is one of those first financial ideas that children get. And you know, and then if the parent could start actually building upon that and helping them to understand what a stock is, what a bond is, take a little bit out of your money that grandma and grandpa gave you, and let's buy, you know, a share of a major corporation, then, you know, this would be a big step toward providing financial security in our country.
Hey, Christine, we're out of time, but are you available June 11th at the same time?
June 11th, I'll be here, Robert.
Because I'd like to talk more about this and the kids and stuff and have a show about that, if you can do it on June 11th.
Absolutely, absolutely. June 11th, I'll
and,
be here.
And then we'll also talk more about that. But to me, the only way you can get a wealthy country is you teach wealth and take that. Everybody's afraid of wealth. They really are.
Well, you know, again, I want to go back to some of our Judeo-Christian beliefs here in this country, is that there is a misconception about wealth. And, you know, it comes, and it's not the love of money is the root of evil. The money is the root of all evil. It's really the love of money is the root of all evil. And basically, if you can take your emotions out of money and make money a tool, whether other than an emotion, then you can start building and providing for your family in a much better way.
Money is an energy of innovation and wisdom.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a tool. We got to rethink our whole purpose here.
We got to expand out of that, yes. It's Financial Fables. It's available at financeinlife.com. And we're going to have Christine back on June 11th, and we're going to talk about children, finances and more about whatever comes up. Because this is something, I grew up in South Dakota, and this is something I lacked, and my parents had it, and it's been a challenge for everybody. And Christine, I really want to thank you and all the listeners for being here. And my MyFi will work next week. Yeah, thank you. And it's financeinlife.com, and the book is Financial Fable. And I want to say good night to everybody.
And it's available on Amazon.com also.
And on Amazon.com also, yes, it is. And I forgot to say that. And I want to thank everybody and all the listeners and Christine. And June 11th, we're going to talk about children and finances. And anyway, good night, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
Good night.